Our verse today is from Psalm 34, 17 to 22. The righteous cry out and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. The righteous person may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. He protects all his bones. Not one of them will be broken. Evil will slay the wicked. The foes of the righteous will be condemned. The Lord will rescue his servants. No one who takes refuge in him will be condemned.
Thank you, Leah. Good morning and welcome also to Austin Cove Community Church. It's so good to have you here with us this morning. I wanted to start a story about a missionary. A missionary went over to Africa and started working away year upon year upon year. Now, over this time, not an awful lot happened. Just continued to plod away and do what he did. Eventually, someone came to him and said, "How have you stayed faithful so long when things have been so discouraging, when you haven't seen a lot of fruit, when you haven't seen a lot happen from the efforts and the work that you've put in? How have you continued to do what you're there to do?" And the missionary replied to him by saying, "Early on, I realized that God called me to faithfulness, not visible success. That the reason he went there was to be faithful to the call of God. That the reason that he was in that place was to do what God called him to and leave the rest to God, leave what would happen to God. And so in the highs, and in the lows, in the good times, and in the bad times, this missionary's focus was on just knowing God and being with him and doing the things that he was called to. The missionary continued on to share a story about how farmers, and this is not like today, although today there's still some truth here today. This is a bit more science to farming today. But back in the time, in other countries where farming is done, what happens is they sow the seed just before the rains come. And then they wait. And then they wait. And we'll wait. And we'll wait some more. And so farmers, they sow this seed and then they let the rains come. And for a long time, that seed is still beneath the soil. You can't see what that seed is doing. You can't see the germination that is coming. But eventually, that seed sprouts. And then it grows. And then a harvest comes. But what's the farmer's job? The farmer's job is to sow the seed. And then to trust God to be faithful and to trust God to be there. And then some years the rains don't come, or some years hail comes and gets the farmer's crop as it comes through. And some years other things happen. But the farmer just continues to sow the seed. When have you faced uncertainty in your life? When have you gone through a season maybe where you just weren't sure what to do? Maybe you had some questions about direction or purpose or meaning, or maybe some things have happened to you that have left you just not sure where is God. Maybe you've faced grief. Maybe you've lost loved ones. Lost family members, lost good friends. Maybe you've lost a job that you didn't want to lose. When have you experienced grief? Real, deep, heart-wrenching grief. How do you handle? How do you cope? What do we do with grief? Where is God in times of suffering and pain? We're starting a series. It's a four-week series looking at the book of Ruth. It's great. Ruth has four chapters. That's great. 4 weeks, one chapter a week. Nice and simple. So here's my challenge to you across the month of June. Read through the book of Ruth at home. Whether that's a chapter a week leading into the sermon or whether that's the week after, or you might just really want to get there and just read the whole book at one point in time. It's actually a really good practice to read something like a whole book in one go because you get all of the highs and the lows and the whole story. But we're going to take our time across the month to just look at a chapter at a time and to really hone in on what that chapter is actually talking to. Because each of the four chapters of Ruth actually have a really distinct kind of focus or purpose to what they're there. And so we're going to look at this story of this character called Ruth. Now, Ruth goes on to be a really significant part of the story of the Bible. It's a whole book of the Bible. And yet, as you will discover, Ruth's origins would suggest that we shouldn't even know her name. We should have no idea who Ruth is. And yet her story has become entrenched in the biblical canon. We're going to look at a story that goes from ruin all the way through to redemption. And so if it's going to go from ruin, you can probably guess where we start. So what I want us to look at today is how do we handle grief and uncertain circumstances? We're not going to go to the fullness of this because there's probably about 17 answers about what this actually looks like. But one particular aspect that we see through the first chapter of the book of Ruth. So if you have your Bibles, I'd love you to grab them out on your phones, but it will also be on the screen behind me. And surprise, surprise, we're going to start at Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and one named Ruth. After they had lived about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. And so the book of Ruth is set up. So we get some context from this, which is important to point out. The time period, it says at the very start, we're in the time of the judges. So this is before the kings of Israel. So we can actually date that fairly effectively. It's around 1160 to 1100 BCE. And so that helps us understand the world that this took place in. We can know what the culture was at the time. We can know some of the practices and some of the principles. And that helps us to understand why certain things happen, because we will read through the book of Ruth. And through a 21st century lens, we go, huh? Hang on, that doesn't add up. That's not right. That's not the way it should be. This is what was going on at the time, and it's important to have that context to understand how it actually fits in that time. Now, how bad was this famine? Because we're told at the start, it's almost like a throwaway line, and there was a famine in the land. Okay, so they come from Bethlehem. Yes, you might hear of Bethlehem later on in the Bible. It plays just a small role in the story of Jesus. But Bethlehem literally means house of bread. It is one of the most fertile areas in the Middle East region. It's one of those areas that always has a harvest, always has fruitfulness and a productive farming culture. For there to be a famine in Bethlehem to the point where this family actually felt they needed to leave, this is not just one failed crop. This is not just one year that the farming didn't come through. This is likely that there's actually been a few years where there has not been a sufficient harvest at harvest time. And so they've had to go somewhere else where there is rain, where there is actually something going on, because this is a severe famine. For the people of Israel to actually get up and go was also a really big thing. Anyone who calls a place home, it takes a lot for you to leave there. Now, if you've got a new job or you've got a new opportunity or something else going for you, then sure, you'll leave your home. But imagine if you were happily placed somewhere, what would it take for you to leave? Something significant has taken place here to cause them to have to go away. And what we also need to understand is they've gone to Moab. That you go, oh yeah, Moab, not so bad. Moab is known as being one of the most different, shall we say, to the understanding of the way that Israelites lived. The way that Moabites actually engaged in life and some of the practice and things that they actually did was really quite different. If we look at the origins of Moab, it's in Genesis chapter 19, verse 36 to 37, we actually discover where Moab came from. And it says this, so both of Lot's daughters, so this is Lot right there towards the beginning, both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. So their father caused them to get pregnant. The older daughter had a son and she named him Moab. And he is the father of the Moabites today. This land was born out of something which should not be. One of the other things is that Moabites worship the god called Chemosh. So Chemosh, it's a pagan god. And they were known to take part in child sacrifice as a fairly common, regular part of their own practices. This is not a nice place. This is not a place that you really want to be unless you really have to. Unless this is the only option that you have. And so the people here, that the story of Naomi and her husband Elimelech and their sons have gone to this place because the famine is so bad. Already their lot is bad. Already their circumstances are difficult. It's easy to look at what happens next and go, gee, that's terrible. This is already terrible. Naomi has already had to leave everything that she knows with her husband and her sons and go to a land which no Israelite really wanted to go and settle in and try and make a life for herself. What we also need to recognize about this, and this is why knowing the time and the age is important, this is a patriarchal society. It is a man's world, and if you don't have a husband or if you don't have sons, you have nothing. There are no safety nets to catch you. There are no other things in place that will sort of make things work for you. For Naomi to lose both her husband and her sons leaves her with absolutely nothing. She can't just go down to Centrelink and get on the dole, or she can't just go down to the local butcher and say, hey, can I have a job here? She can't get a job. She can't go and do these things. This was not what a woman could do in this place at this time. Naomi has lost everything. I wonder if you've had times in your life where you felt like you'd lost everything. Well, maybe not everything, but a lot. How did you feel? What were your emotions? How did you sit in those times? Maybe you're in one of those times. Maybe right now there are some things going on in your life that lead you to wonder and to question, where is God in all? Naomi had, in effect, lost everything. Let's continue on, picking it up at verse 6. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, we will go back with you to your people. So again, what we have going on here is Naomi's actually being incredibly practical. This is a patriarchal society. The best hope that Ruth and Orpah have, is to get married. Their best circumstance, the best thing they could do would be to seek another husband. Because that is the way it worked in a patriarchal society. And so Naomi looks at this and goes, okay, the best case here is for you to go and get married again. So go back, go and be with the person, go and be with your mum, go back to your parents, see if you can find yourself another husband. This is the most practical solution. Naomi is being incredibly practical. So daughters have said, no, we're going to come with you. We're going to go where you're going. We're with you. We want to be there. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons? Now, put in mind here, Naomi is old enough to have got adult sons. It's been a long time since she had her first child. It is unlikely that she's of an age that she can have any future children. Unless, as she goes on to say, return home, my daughters, I am too old to have another husband. And even if I thought there were still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, like maybe if I'm really lucky right now, I could get pregnant and have some sons. Maybe if it was like, you know, the guy down the street, let's go get married and we'll see what happens in 9 months' time. Even if that were to happen, would you then wait until they grew up? Would you wait 18 years for them to become your husband? Because that was the practice in the time. If your husband died, you could potentially marry the brother of your husband. Because it was about marriage. Marriage played a really significant role in that place. And so it could be that if Naomi had other sons, they could marry. But even if she had them then, are you going to wait till they grow up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. So once again, though, here, Naomi is actually being incredibly level-headed. She's surveying the circumstances. She's saying, this is just the way it is. It's not that she likes it. It's not that she agrees with it. But she is also honest. She says, look, this is bitter for me. I don't actually want you to go, but this is what's best for you. In these circumstances, it is not logical for you to stay with me. This is what you would be best to do. Look, said Naomi, talking to Ruth, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. This example here that Ruth actually gives is possibly, there's obviously arguments in different ways, but it is possibly the greatest example of loyalty in the Bible. There are other stories of loyalty throughout the Bible of people choosing to go, but Ruth really is here throwing her lot in with someone who has nothing. There is no real hope for her in this circumstance, but such is her loyalty to Naomi. She has chosen to stay with her. This loyalty was costly. It was not logical. There is no logic to Ruth staying with Naomi. But it was relational and it was spiritual. It says there, your God will be my God. I will adopt your God to be my God. Your people will be my people. For whatever reason, in these circumstances, Ruth has said to Naomi, This is where I am to go. Stop trying to persuade me otherwise. As it says there, Lord, deal with me, be it ever so severely. That was kind of a phrase that we used at the time to say, you know, this is going to happen. You can stop trying to urge me otherwise now, because may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if whatever I say doesn't go on to happen. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So they'd heard word, it has actually returned. Food has returned back to Bethlehem. And so they've headed back and they've got there just as the harvest is about to come in. But again here, Naomi is incredibly straightforward. She tells them to call her Mara. Now, Mara means bitter. That is what the name Mara means. But what's incredible about this story and about the character of Naomi is though she is bitter, she still believes in God. It's clear as she's spoken to this, and again, as you understand the language of what this is, not her being ironic and saying God has made me. No, she genuinely still has a belief in God. Even as she's faced these things, she still believes God is present. But she's also not putting it on. She's not pretending that things are different to what they are. She's not saying, "Oh, you know, it's okay. Like, these things have happened. Don't worry about it." No, she's being very honest. "No, I'm bitter. Call me Mara. God has taken these things from me." In this time of pain and heartache, she is being incredibly honest about how she feels towards God. She's not cursing God. She's not saying he's a terrible God or a terrible thing. But she's also not trying to pretend to feel any other way than how she feels. It actually doesn't serve anyone for her to pretend to be okay. She has lost her husband. She has lost her sons. She has lost one daughter-in-law. She's managed to keep one. And even then, she's tried not to, because it's actually not in her best interests. So she's honest. She still sees God. She still knows God is there. This is not a feel-good chapter. Surprise, surprise, we start with ruin, so we actually have to get into the ruin. And this is one of those stories. Like, you don't get many things that are worse than this. The circumstances that we actually start with Naomi losing everything, with Ruth choosing to stay with her, even though there is no good reason to. If you read ahead through Ruth, you'll get the spoilers. You'll find out that it actually turns out to be okay. Spoilers. But in this moment for today, I just want us to actually sit in this spot for a moment. Because for some of you, you've been in this spot, or for some of you, you're in this spot today, where you have lost something, or you've maybe lost everything. And we can learn a lot from the way that Naomi responds before she gets the hope that is to come. Because in this moment, Naomi doesn't know how this story will end. We do, so we can jump ahead, but she doesn't. And yet in this moment, though she is honest and heartbroken and disappointed and sad and bitter, she still sees God. So when then have you experienced these things? It's actually really helpful to name them for yourself. You don't need to name them out loud, but name them for yourself. When have you experienced these kind of pains? Maybe you haven't experienced them yet, and I pray you haven't, but many, if not most of us, who have been on the journey of life for at least a little while, we would have experienced something like this. Naomi was faithful to God despite her pain and uncertainty. Not because she had hope, not because she believed that, because again, this is also pre-Jesus. We don't have the understanding of the Christian faith that we have today, of the Spirit being with us, of the church coming around us. She would have had some hope in going back to her people because she would have had some understanding of the way that the people of Israel look after one another. But it's still very much dependent on the other choosing to do so. She doesn't have a lot of reason to still actually recognize God, but she does. Now, here's some other spoilers. Ruth becomes part of the genealogy of Jesus. Because Ruth goes on to get married. Come back next couple of weeks to hear about that. She goes on to have a son. Who goes on to have a son. Who goes on to have a son called David. Who you know as King David. Who goes on to have a son, to have a son, yada, 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 all the way down to the person of Jesus. And so now when the genealogy of Jesus is shared, and in the people of Israel, genealogies are really important. This little character from Moab, this Ruth, who has no reason to have any significance in our world, is now part of the genealogy of Jesus. Because Naomi was faithful. And Ruth, I can't imagine that she didn't learn some of her faithfulness from Naomi. That spending this time of clinging to Naomi because she saw the character of Naomi. As Naomi had these losses, Ruth still wanted to be with her. Even as Naomi called herself bitter, she was still someone that Ruth was like, no, my lot is in with you. You're the person that I am going to cling to. You are who is there for me. Something about the way Naomi went about life meant that Ruth saw her as someone to depend upon. So one of the things that we see through this chapter, again, trying not to jump ahead to where we know things go, is that God is actually still at work. Even when life feels empty and bitter. That in this moment, we don't know where the story will go, but Naomi still recognizes God is there. She's gone back to her people. She's gone back to her God. She's honest about her emotions. She's not pretending to be something that she's not. But God is still at work, even when life feels empty and bitter. So here's one of the challenges for us. Wherever you're at today, and whether this is the season you're in now, or maybe this will be a season that comes one day, or maybe you can reflect on when this was your season, is to actually learn to trust God, even when the circumstances seem empty. Even when you can't see how God is going to provide, that you can learn to trust Him in those moments, irrespective. Sometimes faithfulness matters more than certainty. And this is a little about the story at the beginning, the missionary story. Sometimes it's actually more important to just be faithful. I actually don't know how things are going to go in this circumstance. I actually don't quite know how God is going to come through. Actually, I'm quite upset about how things are right now, but I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to be faithful in this moment. She isn't faithful because she knows how things are going to go. She's faithful because that's what she has learned to do with her God. The other thing here is God often begins restoration before we can see it. Just like the seed starts to germinate under the soil before you actually see the fruitfulness that is going to come. Sometimes actually how things are going to actually be restored to you will start to happen before you can even see it starting to happen. See, it's very clear as you read through the rest of the story that God's hand is actually at work in these circumstances. And Ruth's redemption and the way that Naomi is going to be redeemed as well through Ruth's redemption, the seeds of that commencing have actually already started. By their returning home, by her clinging with her, all of these decisions actually become part of the way that she is redeemed. But at the moment those decisions are made, you wouldn't know that that's where it was going to go. It's not A plus B equals C. It's be faithful. Be faithful. Be faithful. And as you continue to be faithful, God orchestrates and involves and moves and helps things to come into place to help to bring about the redemption that is there. So where can we see God's hidden faithfulness? Where can we see in your life, as you think about this, maybe you need to actually take stock for a moment and retell your story. I know I did an activity once when I was in Bible college, and they actually got us to write out our story. And so I was like, all right, I'll do that. Yeah, and I'll do this and this and this and this. And then when I looked back and looked at it, I thought, I started to see places that God had been alive in my life that I hadn't even realized were there. It was only when I actually took the time to look back and go, oh, and then that. And you start to see how God's been faithful. And so as you face circumstances maybe that are outside your control, it might be helpful to actually look at what are the circumstances that have built to the place where you are. And in some cases, it helps you to see maybe decisions that have been made that haven't been helpful, different ways that have sort of led to being where you are. But it can also help you to see those little snippets of where God has been present, even when you may not have realized that he was there in that moment. But one of the key things to recognize is that faithfulness is often more important than certainty, knowing exactly how things are going to go. Because we also know there are stories that don't end up with the happy ending. We also know that there are times where it doesn't lead to everything turning out okay. But in this circumstance, we can see that Ruth and Naomi chose to continue to be faithful despite everything that was in their path. They remained faithful. Let's pray. Father, I pray you would help us to be faithful. Wherever we find ourselves today, whatever may have gone on in our past, may be going on, or Lord, as we face new circumstances in the future, we just pray that you would help each of us to seek you and to be in relationship with you. Lord, for those who may sit here and resonate with Naomi, life is bitter. I'm broken. Things are hurting at the moment. I pray that you would wrap your arms around them, that your spirit would be alive and active to bring the hope that we all need. Help us as your church to support one another, to be the answer when people are facing this level of brokenness. We have hope. So Lord, I pray you'd help us. And help us to be faithful.